Hello and welcome to CKCU 93.1 FM, Ottawa's Queer Media, and we're kicking it at the Capitol. And you're listening to the Velvet Studio, as I mentioned, Ottawa's Queer Media. I totally got that the wrong way round. And I have a fantastic, truly fantastic group of guests here today. I have RJ and Vincent. Would you two like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name's RJ Pate. I'm the co-founder of the Black Lives Matter Ottawa Coalition, the one of two Black Lives Matter chapters currently in Canada. And I know I'm just a local activist dealing with, you know, the racial oppression that's here in our state of Canada and, you know, bringing those correlations between Canada and the U.S.
Hi, my name is Vincent. I'm a campaigns organizer for the Student Federation of the University of Ottawa, Local 41 of the Canadian Federation of Students. And I'm just also a local activist, pretty involved with Black Lives Matter and a couple of other local organizations.
And today we're talking about the depoliticization of Pride, and we're expecting Tammy Dobson to join us at any moment. And we will also have on the line Matt Barker, who we're hoping to connect with any second. Hi, is this Matt? Awesome. I'm going to try and connect you now. Let's see if this works.
Sorry?
Oh, there we go. Excellent. So can you hear me?
There we go. Yeah, I can hear you.
Awesome sauce. So let's do that. So we have Matt on the line. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
My name is Matt Barker. I work for a new publication called EQ. And I'm considered, I guess, a media activist in a sense, where I create content for the purpose of awareness and human rights. And I just finished a documentary, came out 2 weeks ago, and it's called Blood, Sweat, and Queers.
And we'll be getting into that in just a few minutes as we explore the topic of whether or not, and if so, how so, Pride has become depoliticized within Canada. Now, to provide some context, we reached out to an activist, Elizabeth Coleman, who is in Istanbul in Turkey. And Elizabeth managed to send us a statement regarding kind of how Pride went down in Istanbul. Now, some of you may be familiar with kind of what happened there. So I'll read her statement to folks just to kind of get an idea of what's happening elsewhere in the world. She begins with, "Let me begin by saying that I'm sorry I cannot speak with you directly. Additionally, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to explain to your listeners a little of what we face here in Istanbul." She arrived late to the Pride March around 5:30 p.m. There was no point in rushing, as the march tends to take 2 hours to get from Taksim to Tunnel. When my partner and I arrived at Taksim Square, emerging from the metro, we could see a large number of riot police. This is nothing new, and so we were not worried. We looked to the side to see where the group of Pride participants were being held, and at this point, I assumed they had decided not to let the marchers across the square. This is now a standard policy applied to any march along Istiklal Avenue, and not an immediate cause for worry. We decided to walk along an alternative route through the back streets to reach Tunnel. Unfortunately, we soon saw that this route was blocked and turned back towards the square. At this time, the police arrived and activated a water cannon against the people in the street. We ran to a small corner shop for cover and sheltered there until it ceased. From there, we stood in a coffee shop at the edge of the square, which was full of activists and participants, while we planned our next move. We decided it was best to take the metro to the next stop, which was adjacent to Tunnel. When we got there, a number of marchers had been able to reach there and were enjoying the atmosphere, which at that time was quiet. However, feeling uneasy about the whole thing, we moved further away to Galata Tower, where people often gather after the march. In this area, we didn't meet any violence. Later, after 11-ish, as we returned along Istiklal Avenue, we were passed by a group of riot police running full pelt towards Tunnel. Social media reports show that the gassing was still going on in some areas, even at midnight. I was lucky. The worst I encountered that day was a water cannon. It's fair to say that no one was expecting Pride to turn out like this. We were not expecting a last-minute ban or the unprovoked violence. There was a mass feeling of shock and confusion at the time. There has been a police presence at Pride before, but the marches have been peaceful. 2 years ago, the march fell directly after the occupation of Gezi Park and mass social unrest. During the preceding months, the police had deployed water cannons, tear gas, and violence against protesters and those caught in the crossfire. Yet, surprisingly, there were no incidents during the march that year. Last year, it was similar. Far too many police ready to act, but doing nothing. All of the past 12 marches have passed without incident. The official reason for banning the march was Ramadan. This cannot be a real reason behind it. Last year, the march also fell during Ramadan. It was not a problem, and we had no trouble at all. In fact, the ruling party, AKP, who also control the municipality where the march takes place, referred to last year's Pride in their election materials as an example of tolerance. A quote from their brochure reads, "Turkey is a country that can hold a gay pride on Istiklal Avenue even in the middle of the month of Ramadan. The increased visibility of conservative people does not carry the meaning that there is an intervention to people's lifestyles." Regardless of the incidents of Ramadan, the Pride Weekend march happen on the same days every year. We always march on the final Sunday of June. This fact is widely known, and the authorities could have raised objections earlier. The tactic of banning the march of those already gathered is, let me call it, sneaky. It feels like entrapment. A lot of us believe that the ban was connected to the recent elections. The Republican People's Party and the People's Democratic Party did well, and it was the first election in which the HDP could gain parliamentary seats. This means Erdogan and the ruling AKP are losing power and they do not feel secure. There are a lot of reasons why holding on to power is so important to Erdogan, although this is another conversation entirely. And we have previously seen that any attempts to oust him or question his actions have been met with violence. It's also significant that MPs from the CHP and HDP marched with us, and that prior to the march, CHP-controlled municipalities displayed rainbows on their social media accounts with good wishes. It's important to have political support here. Although homosexuality isn't illegal here, we have no constitutional protection regarding non-discrimination, and an equivalent of gay panic defence can dramatically reduce the sentence for anyone charged with violence against an LGBTI person. Although the constitution was recently reformed, proposals to include LGBTI people were rejected. MPs from these parties can be allies in pushing for recognition for our rights. It's because simple rights, such as the right to employment or even life, are violated so frequently that pride is political here. Activism is a daily occurrence. Being out here is an action. While a lot of the community campaigns tirelessly all year round, Pride is a chance for those who cannot be out to join in and be lost in the crowd, and for allies to show their support. While we're still fighting for our rights, there is no room for the commercialization that is seen in a lot of Pride parades. I think that's an important difference. Marching in Turkey is defiant. It is a proud declaration that we're everywhere and we're not going anywhere. Pride here is usually peaceful. I'd like to see that return next year. The first Pride was a riot, but we have enough violence here. Those who want to march are peaceful, but they have the spirit of resistance. If they are attacked, they will not back down. We really aren't going anywhere. Since the day of the march, 68 individuals and 4 LGBTI organizations have filed criminal complaints against the authorities involved that day. The applications name the Interior Minister, the Governor of Istanbul, the Istanbul Police Chief, and the police officers involved in the ground that day. Petitions cover, but are not limited to, violence, bodily harm, torture, offences against freedom, and misconduct in office. There is a pessimism regarding the outcome of these applications. Trials here are often not in our favour, and there is hope that petitions filed with the European Court of Human Rights will make better progress. There has always been violence towards the LGBT community since the march. In Ankara, posters have been put up by a conservative group declaring, "If you see someone engaged in the dirty business of the tribe of Lot, kill the doer and the don both." Unfortunately, this call has been acted upon, and an activist has already been attacked in their own home. The prosecutors, they know they'll get away with their actions. The perpetrators know they will get away with their actions and stated so in front of police officers, who later informed the victim that they had not been raped. When we consider these actions along with the attacks in Istanbul and cyber attacks against LGBTI organization websites, it seems safe to say that we are in store for some dark days. Those who would like to keep up to date on LGBTI issues in Turkey might like to visit the website lgbtinewsturkey.com, where news reports are translated from Turkish into English with the hope of reaching a global audience. I'd like to thank Elizabeth Coleman for taking the time to put her thoughts to paper and sharing that that experience with us. It was very important that we hear that. What do you two think of that?
I think the wording is really key on that, stating that, you know, it really is a march happening in Istanbul and not a parade that is happening in these first world countries and where our privileges are much higher in our LGBTQ, you know, I+ communities, where they are having still marches, like it isn't a parade. They don't have the ability just to have a parade. They need to march for their rights and march for what's important to them. So I think, you know, her wording in that statement was quite amazing, and that's really something that we should, you know, keep an eye on.
Excellent. Now, we have been joined by Tammy Dobson. How are you doing?
I'm fine, and I was lost up until about 5 minutes ago.
It's not an easy campus to navigate, that's for sure. Yeah. Tammy, do you want to quickly introduce yourself?
Tammy Dobson, Chair of Capital Pride for 2015.
Excellent. And Capital Pride is referring here to the Pride in Ottawa City. For those folks who are listening to us outside of Ottawa, one of whom is Matt Barker with Inquiry, which is a GLBT multimedia group. Now, recently we heard, I had the pleasure of watching the Blood, Sweat and Queers documentary that you'd made. Kind of what was the impetus behind that?
Honestly, it started with wanting to understand the real story behind Pride. I think my generation in particular sees Pride as a party. And for me, I needed to show the real story. I needed to show the full piece. And when we started production last year during World Pride, we just wanted to know how it started. And then as we kept looking around and meeting these people, we started to realize that we're maybe using pride in the wrong way, whereas pride should maybe necessarily be considered as a vehicle of change. And 2 million people, like, it's a lot of people. And just listening to that letter, I mean, there's so much work that needs to be done. You know, and that's why we produce Blood, Sweat, and Queers, because we wanted to show the hard work. We wanted to show the literal blood of, you know, pride in a sense, and try to unify everyone and to say, look at this, look around us, you know, open your eyes. But the sad thing, I guess, about Blood, Sweat, and Queers is that during this year's experience, we launched the doc the same day that the U.S. Approved safe-sex marriage, and I just, like, everywhere I looked, it just reminded me that Blood, Sweat, and Queers needed to be out there more, the message. And everywhere I looked, it was a constant reminder that we had work to do, just from people's perspective of Pride itself, what they were doing.
One of the things that I thought was interesting that really, I mean, a few things from the documentary stuck with me when I was watching it. And for those interested in kind of seeing that, I believe you can find it on Vimeo. And I believe
Vimeo, yep.
Do you have a website as well where they can find that?
Yeah, nquery.com.
Excellent. And it's definitely worth, I think it's only about 13 minutes, but it's worth absolutely every second. One thing that really struck me, and I will disclose that last year I was the vice chair of Capital Pride for a time here in Ottawa as well. One thing that struck me was during the documentary, somebody says that, you know, the Pride Festival has turned almost into a rolling advertisement with one float after another. And, you know, having overseen, helped to oversee Pride last year, I mean, it's definitely possible to see that happening in lots of places. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that there's some social responsibility that corporations should take if they're going to be a part of Pride. Like, there needs to be some sort of legislation that proves that X brand is actually doing something for the community rather than just slapping their logo on a rainbow. Pride not only is sold, but so is Church Street in Toronto, for instance. All I'm really saying is we don't need everything to be political. Mm-hmm. We don't need everything to be, non-corporate. But it's more about where's the conversation and where does that brand fit in and what can we do right now? Because even in our own community, we are not together. We are in separate silos. You know, gay men do not attend the Dyke March. Okay, that's fine. But the lack of participation even this past year during the Trans March was astonishing. And even and not even on a political sense, the AIDS vigil, I was surprised that there was no one there that I knew that was positive as well,
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, the Human Rights Conference that was in Toronto this past year, it missed everyone. I don't understand how there wasn't a lineup down the road for that,
No.
The people that were on the panel were, so well-spoken, and the things I learned were so beautiful. And with BSQ, what I'm trying to say is let's go that way again, but let's do so in a celebratory state.
I think the sense of celebration was really persistent in your messaging. We were actually speaking about the documentary on the way here, RJ and Vincent and myself. And RJ, I think you brought up a kind of a question regarding some of the crowd shots that were there.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was noticing that, most of the crowd shots were mainly white people. And in 2011, consensus for Toronto, it was about 50-50 for people of color living in Toronto and white people living in Toronto. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic to see that there are really only white representation in these streets in Toronto, and it's really a shame. Where are these 50% of people of color? Why aren't they participating, and why aren't they being included? Why aren't these people of color being at the front of, these marches? They are the ones that are being marginalized, specifically, in these systems to the most, the highest extents. So I think that was quite interesting.
Are you asking why there wasn't participation?
I'm wondering, what's your opinion on why, white people of color, weren't so much seen within, I guess, World Pride last year, and, not in the parade. It was really, most of the shots, honestly, were white people, and I'm really wondering, what's your opinion on that?
Well, in my experience, when it comes to diversity, I see the diversity. I may not see, I don't necessarily see specific color or the parade being a majority.
Okay.
But, there's a lot of families at Pride, right? A lot of white families who are just, and most of them actually are just allies, To them, it's a spectacle, And that's fine because that's gonna help with the educational, which community.
Sorry, do you want to jump in, Evan?
Yeah. I think more so what we were trying to get across is the fact that, it's not so much a criticism of the documentary and focusing on white people per se.
Oh, okay.
But I think more so the issue was that the systemic issue of Pride being seen as an event that is planned for and by white cisgender middle class gay men, and that is very evident in the footage that you had took of the crowd shots, for example, and of the parade. And if you had any ideas more so about the inclusionary nature of Pride and how we can work to make sure that non-white people are better represented in Pride itself, not specifically in the documentary.
Right. I do feel that, especially with Kevin Bulu, who is the World Pride Executive Director, he was all about making a sound, diversified celebration. And I do have to congratulate him. He did do his best to make Pride something for everyone. But I would also say that the non maybe white male community can it step up, and that I don't see many people within the Black community, actually in any ethnicity community, any ethnic group, stepping up necessarily to create change. But I think that it almost transcends the topic of race, in a sense, where pride is the fight for human, regardless of race, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. And to me, if we see pride as a human mission, we don't have to worry about diversity, in a sense. It's just that we're all together for one.
I mean,
does that make sense?
I can definitely see where you're coming from there, and I think we have possibly a couple of guests who may not agree. If you have an opinion on this, this is out to our listeners. Send us a tweet at Velvet Studio One. Comment on our playlist, or get in touch with us through Facebook or through CKCU. We'd like to hear what you think of this very important discussion. In order for time, I'm going to move on to the next question, because I'm imagining we can loop back into this. Feel free to stay on the line, Matt, if you'd like.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Our first question is, has Pride become depoliticized? I'm going to start off with Tammy, because then we'll just kind of work our way around that way.
Pride becoming depoliticized. Okay, so let's identify Pride as a platform. And then Pride the organization, and then Pride the parade. Because, I'm only going to speak for Ottawa. I'm not going to speak for the global movement. I would say that I'm not the authority. In that I had been out of politics, if you will, for a very, very long time. And I was pulled out of mothball simply because of what happened with the current Pride organization and a desire to see it move forward for the 30th anniversary. So in Ottawa, there has been an accusation that we are not political enough. And again, I'm going to draw attention back to the three components of Pride in Ottawa, and that there's the global Pride movement, which is the platform for which we get together to celebrate, protest, educate, all of those things. And then there's Pride, the organization, which organizes the festival or the celebration, again, in protest and moment for education. So the organization, which is a brand new one that was composed, it started with a think tank, a focus group, and then it became a board as we moved towards a governance model. And then we created and hired the festival operations. So the board creates the policy, the oversight, the financial oversight, and then the operations are the ones that actually create the vision and execute the vision of Pride. Mm-hmm. But as a whole, the organization, what it does is creates an opportunity for people to speak of Pride in whatever way they see fit. So if that is a protest, then protest. If it's a moment to educate, you want to educate, then educate. If you want to celebrate, then celebrate. We're not dictating to you how you do it. What we are doing is creating a space. So at the board level, we are political in that we advocate for a space for the community as a whole, an opportunity. But each one of our members is political in their own right, but we do not politicize our meetings in that we don't sit there and advocate for our individual communities. We create a space for all of our communities. So in that sense, people think we're not political enough. But truthfully, if we all sat at the table and just advocated for our individual communities, we probably wouldn't get far. So all the people at the table, and I have some very fiercely political people, we advocate as a whole for the organization. For mm-hmm. individual communities, we take that moment within Pride, the celebration, education, and protest, and that's when we do it.
Do you want to touch on that, RJ? So the question was, has Pride been depoliticized? And Tammy actually broke that down into, Pride Inc., as in the organization, Pride, as in the global movement, and then Pride as the parade itself. Do you think it's political?
I believe it was political. I live in Ottawa. It's no longer political. You're talking about the difference between celebrate, protest, and education, and all those three. All I'm seeing is the celebration, the education, the protesting. You're saying, those zones are there, those mediums to create that process is there. Where are we finding those? How can I find them? How can people in the community find them? Because they're not here. And why should we have to, you know, go to the board at Capitol Pride and be like, hey, we need this. Like, you guys should be able to see that, like, people aren't being represented, like, people of color aren't being represented properly, trans people, you know, homeless trans people, like, queers in this community aren't being represented. So I think, you know, a big portion of it is that all I'm seeing is, you know, the celebration part of this. And if these mediums exist, they're not being advertised, and they're not, you guys aren't trying hard enough to reach out to the community.
Do you want to go ahead?
Yeah. So I find it really interesting to say that Pride is this is a creator of community space where communities can all come together as one and live together. In reality, this is not the case. This hasn't been the case for numerous years. And I think to say this is very hypocritical, especially when Pride is like the Pride organization in Ottawa is being called out constantly based on trans representation, based on issues of representation of people of color, of bilingualism, which was actually a really interesting concern. And I think a lot of the arguments that I've heard when raising these criticisms to different folks at Capitol Pride was that, well, if you don't like it, you should come and change it. I mean, like, I'm going to be completely honest here. It's not my responsibility to run up and be like, hey, Massa, can we please have some rights, Massa? No. Like, I mean, Capitol Pride should be openly attempting to go and get support from different community members to actually truly become a representative organization. When we talk about what it is now, it is not.
I mean, this is a critique that is not just unique to Ottawa. I mean, I've spoken with Pride organizations across the country, and and people face these criticisms in lots of organizations that run the Pride festivals across Canada. And, you know, our listeners are also listening to this from across Canada, not just here in Ottawa. So it's important that we broaden the answers and the question. That really raises an interesting, there's two interesting options there. One, which is creating a platform for the communities to kind of step up and make use of. And the other one is proactively reaching out to the communities. I mean, these are two very different approaches. Does anybody want to
Luke,
comment
I'd like
that?
To comment to that, yeah. Because when we're reaching out, I can't think in recent memory of the last two prides that I was in before I was organizing, where they sat down in the middle of their organizational year and had a community consultation and created every venue for every opportunity for every community that needed to be represented. What we do is we hold a number of signature events to celebrate and to fundraise because it is required. But if somebody's not seeing something they want, then there is an expectation that you should create. And truthfully, we can't do it all for you. We are 32 people. The community is probably, if you do the numbers and the demographics and percentages, is about 50,000 people. Last year at the parade, there was 110,000 people. We can't possibly do it all. And that's why we do ask people for help. And we were on social media. We advertised the jobs publicly. We went in newspapers. We went on television. We went on the radio. We were very present. However, the responses were usually people speaking to what they weren't seeing and to which we said the door is open. Truthfully speaking, we can only do so much. Somebody recently criticized this, Vincent, you would be one of them, on our Facebook page that we weren't bilingual. And another gentleman named Steve Cooper also said the same thing. And I said, you know what? We're doing our best. Our resources are limited. We are launching not only an entirely new organization, but a new festival and a lot of new programs to go with that. And 32 people can only do so much at once, as well as restructuring and rebuilding. So in that amount of time, when you're creating an organization and a festival side by side, we can't do it all. So when we ask people for help, it's because we need help. We're not asking so we can be railed at because it wasn't there in the first place. We admitted that launching the website without being fully bilingual was a mistake, but it was a result of limited resources and limited time. And we're still working towards that. Our press releases are always bilingual. Our Facebook page, we get the translations in there as fast as possible. Sometimes the French goes out before the English and the English before the French. But again, it's about resources. If we had the resources, everything would be perfect all the time.
Now, Matt.
I was actually going to jump it over
to you.
Yeah, like I think Pride organizations get a lot of criticism, but they really are doing a good job. And it's not necessarily their fault. There is lots of political, hoopla to go through. But like one thing that I was thinking, and a little bit about what BSQ is trying to say, is Pride is about the fight for humanity in a sense. Not, I don't believe anyways, a fight for a single race or a single, you know, orientation or identity. It's just, it really is, if we look at it as a vehicle to create change for humanity, then we cover everyone, regardless of if you're LGBTQRSTUV.
I want to move on to the next question here, which is, you know, what exists to be political?
I don't know. I think we need to let them speak. I see a lot of action going on over there.
All right, trying to go ahead.
Waving,
this is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. First of all, my identity as a queer person does not exist independent of my identity as a black man or as a cisgendered person or as any other group that I might belong to. And to say that Pride is this movement that is like supposed to be, as you put it, supports like supporting the LGBTQRSTUV, let's talk about erasure, movement is extraordinarily offensive because my identities exist as a part of it. I mean, like, there's a reason why Blockorama in Toronto, for example, is mainly attended by black folks, and it's because we do not see ourselves represented in these festivals, and this is one of the only places in the year where we can actually be both queer, queer or trans, queer and or trans, and black, because these identities are often segmented. And what we're seeing is that when we say we want to celebrate the LGBTQ community, the exact image that comes into mind is white, cisgender, middle class males. And
I will
agree,
for sure.
This is the problem here,
right? You're definitely right about what comes to mind.
And I think one of the other things that I'd like to mention, just to go back to something that Tammy had said, was the idea of we can't do it all and we can't have all of these things. And that's a valid concern, right? I mean, like, as an organization, as organizations, prides are limited in what they can do, right? All that we're asking for is some sort of visibility and a recognition, I guess, of intersectionality. For example, Twin Cities Pride this year, their Grand Marshal was one of the organizers of Black Lives Matter, and they actually held a die-in at the beginning of this.
And it was an excellent demonstration. I agree. I saw the pictures. Awesome stuff.
Fantastic, yeah. Right? And I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about solidarity, when we're talking about intersectionality. That's the kind of representation that we want to see. And when we essentially say that Pride is this global movement, we're essentially whitewashing the folks that are, well, I mean, whitewashing in our current society, because the majority of people are white and movements have been led by white people. We essentially see the erasure of the identities of people of color who have somehow to complement their, have to either like decide between their identity as a person of color and their identity as a queer person. And so, I mean, this is where I'm coming from with this, where it's like, I don't see myself represented in this organization. At the same time, I don't want to be like Uncle Tomming it up and being like, yeah, no, it's definitely, you need to do this. And this is what you need to, like, this is what you need to do and like go through it. I feel like as a person of color who's already going through all of this, all of these things, I don't have the time to do it, right? Like, I just want to have a festival that also represents me, right?
And I think you have so much passion that create action, you know, you can totally do that, right? I guess the good thing about Pride is, in a sense, it can be molded by action and passion that you just experienced. And I would totally, like, we should have this conversation in Toronto as well and see what we can do to make Pride even more diverse and feature people like, you know, Black Lives Matter and groups like that on a bigger level, not just a party or a stage, but make it more of an effort.
I think your comments really lend themselves to the question of, you know, what's left for Pride to be political about? I mean, you mentioned the Black Lives Matter protests and the fact that they were recognized as a Grand Marshal. Now, RJ, you've been involved with the chapter here in Ottawa. Is that something that, you know, Pride should become more active in?
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, black trans women are like the most targeted, you know, trans women, you know, in this continent. It's ridiculous.
With a 14% murder rate and a 40% rate of attempting suicide.
Exactly. And it's like, it's to not bring that in, it really erases, you know, our color, you know, like, I'm a black queer man, so is Vincent. Like, you know, to not have color in, you know, our LGBTQI plus, you know, demonstrations and our, you know, even, like, in the parade, for instance, is, like, so erasing to us. And it's just such a concept where I'm not okay to get rid of my, you know, my color. So, like, Black Lives Matter Toronto, like, they do get involved, you know, with the trans community. They do get involved with, you know, the queer community within Toronto. That's what Black Lives Matter Ottawa is also, you know, we're attempting to do that too, you know. You'll see a demonstration from us, you know, at Pride, you know, this year. Like, it needs to happen.
That would be incredible.
Thank you.
We would invite it, and we still do. And we do have on a member at large on the operations committee who works for human rights. She's going to be organizing the vigil, but she's also a lawyer who works for human rights causes. I would encourage you, her name's Melanie, I would encourage you to get a hold of our producer. This is what we want. We're not closed to that dialogue, but again, we need the support as much as you need the support from Pride as an organization. But truthfully, it's a little chicken and egg where we started on this one. We do need people to educate us. We need people who to participate with us. It's not a closed conversation. It's just I think sometimes people are directing their concerns in a way that we're sitting there trying to create a structure, but the structure is there to lend to the next part, which is the festival, and then the festival is there. But again, we at one point we referred to the festival as a canvas, and the community is to paint it, and that's what we need. But again, we'll never say that we're not making mistakes. Of course, it's not going to be perfect out of the gates, and we didn't promise that. But what we do invite is the dialogue. And if we seem quiet, it's because sometimes we were overwhelmed, not with the demands of what we could be, but more of trying to get it together in a very short amount of time. Just the process of getting city support, not that they were reluctant, but it's a challenge. The parade route, all of those things take time. And now we're at the point where we want everyone to. And I'm sorry that it sounds like we're saying come to us, but that's what we actually need. We need for you to come to us and tell us what you need, and we're going to do what we can. That is our organization.
Well, and I think this is interesting. I think this is where the problem stems, because communities of color don't feel as though they should be knocking on doors asking for themselves to be represented.
But we expect that from everyone. It's not just community color. It's our francophone. There's women's groups that don't feel represented at times. This goes a long way.
And that's all well and good. But I think the problem is that, like, I think the issue with it is the active approach. Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel that as a community of color, there is a lot for me to lose in going up to this organization and saying, we need you to represent us more. Here's some ideas of things that you can do.
I would welcome that conversation,
and
Vincent.
I think it's much more welcoming, and it's much more, it removes a lot of the risk from communities of color to actually have members from Pride go and say, come to us and say, and it's a goodwill gesture to say, look, we are interested in making our festival a lot more inclusive and ensuring that communities of color are better represented, for example, or that Francophones are better represented. What can we, and like having a real conversation with people where Capital Pride as an organization approaches these communities, because it actually, at that point, that changes the dynamic, right? That changes the dynamic from us having to demand for rights again to an organization that's actually actively willing to try to make the organization a lot more inclusive.
Have you looked at the composition of our board, though? And I think you have to take a deeper look at who's on the board and also who's on operations, because if you're saying we're not diverse, then you're sadly mistaken.
I want to reel it back.
You have to take a deeper look, Vincent, because we are very diverse on our board and on operations.
That's very tokenistic of you to say, but I think RJ
tokenistic?
Has something. Yeah.
I don't understand. You're going to deny the composition of our board and our operations. I mean, that's to erase them.
No, of course, right? And I'm not saying that the folks of color that exist on your board are not, like,
people of color. Like, we're not denying their skin color by any means.
Or the trans individuals.
Yeah, exactly, and who they identify as or what they identify as. But saying that your board is diverse, and especially speaking at the top of your board, it means, as a white, you know, like, a white cis woman, like, I don't know what diversity means to you.
I'm not going to apologize for what I am, but I am going to say that I've done something about it. And to apologize for what I am and for the fact that I've done something about it, and in the absence of the chaos, or I should say in the midst of the chaos, that was the bankruptcy of the former organization, I could have done nothing, and nothing would have happened. And truthfully, nobody else stepped up. All right, except the people that are part of our board. No one else did anything.
You all seem to expect people of color to come to you and ask for help, which is
you know
not
what we actually we did approach many groups. Some said yes, some had misgivings and chose not to join. And you know what? We can't help the decision. We gave the invitation. We did approach, and there's lots of people can step up and say that too.
So the Velvet Studio does air in locations other than Ottawa. So I'm going to rein the specificity back a bit. You know, one of the things, and I feel like I want to capture what you're trying to say that may have been missed, and I think it speaks to what Matt was saying as well. There are certain groups who are, you know, incredibly disadvantaged. For example, I'm doing some work on GLBT, New Canadians and Refugees. You know, these are folks who may not have the knowledge of who to contact or who to step up to. So a proactive approach in scenarios such as that becomes vital in order to engage with those communities. I mean, I understand that, you know, a lot of the Pride organizations across Canada, you know, simply don't have capacity. There are 40 festivals across the country, some of which are incredibly small and some of which are offering $5 million budgets such as Toronto. And it's, you know, it really speaks to, you know, the diversity in strength and size. You know, how do you balance, you know, the celebration and the festival with the causes of the community? We're going to kick it off with Vincent.
Great. So I think that there are definitely things to be celebrating in the queer community and in the queer and trans communities, and it's important to have a space to celebrate those in. However, Pride, in and of itself, in my opinion, should be vastly more political than it actually is. And I will. And my explanation for this is that we've often seen these Pride movements, and I'd say larger like community organizations in general. What comes to the top of my head is the Canadian Centre for Gender and Sexual Diversity, being more happy to celebrate 10 years of marriage equality in Canada, which happened, if I'm not mistaken, a few days ago. Yeah. Than they are to actually point out the issues that we are still not equal. We still do not have, like, people, like, queer and trans folks are still facing enormous amounts of discrimination, especially in rural communities, right? There are a whole bunch of issues for which there is still a very direct need for political protest and action. And I feel like a lot of the time those are being erased in current Pride celebrations. I would be much happy to see a march that, like a march, and I say this specifically because I think there is a very definite difference between a march and a parade. I'd like to see a march that is very inclusive of all communities, as I mentioned earlier, but also a march that recognizes that we, even though we're still working towards rights, right? We're not at this point where everything, we're equal now, we can celebrate, yay, where there are disproportionate amounts of LGBTQ homeless youth, drug addiction problems with LGBTQ youth, trans women of color being murdered at rates that are much higher, for example. And so these are the kind of things that I'm just concerned about.
What about yourself, RJ? You know, how would you balance celebration and causes? Are they interchangeable?
I mean, celebrations. For instance, here, like, I went to Pride as a youth here. And I came away with no education, and I think that's mainly what's happening. We go there, we celebrate, and I come back with nothing other than that I should have felt a sense of community in Ottawa, and I didn't feel a sense of community. I didn't see myself represented, you know, as a queer black man, you know, in this community. And I think that was a large problem here. And I need to see more education within this. If we're putting, like, for instance, Toronto's putting $4.5 million into, you know, their celebration there, why am I not being educated with some of this money? Like, if we took half of that money, you know, people have resources at home. People are so creative in Toronto and here, like the artists in the, you know, the community. If you reach out to those people, you know what I mean? Funded for them, you know, to get that. If we use some of that money and, you know, put into resources, like you said, in refugees that coming, you know, coming to Canada, you know, LGBTQ refugees coming here, they have the ability to come here. We don't have the resources to help them. We don't have those resources. They come here and they have to find those resources for themselves. They have to create those resources themselves. And I mean, we're just dealing with this problem now. And it's really a shame because once they get here, it's like, you're on your own. Good luck. You know, if we spent, you know, if we stopped the celebration for a year, you know, put all that money into resources, you know, went out to the community and be like, what do you know? What can you help us with? It would change, you know, Pride in Canada completely. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important to, you know,
I love that idea. But I do think that it does come down to format And how do you mix politics in celebration? And I think the word celebration may not be the right word sometimes. It could be the word party. And I think that in order to have that conversation, there just needs to be maybe a theme within Pride that allows for a conversation. And maybe that being a part of the message where someone is just conversing about how they feel, their sexuality, and that in itself is celebration to me. But a party, it means that it's without narrative.
Exactly.
And that it's just partying. So the format, I think, you're right about saying, yeah, ask the community, you know?
What about yourself, Tammy? How do you see the format of, you know, a party or celebration versus the cause and the politics?
Well, back in 1983, which was my first Pride, I came to Toronto was my first Pride, not Ottawa. I'm born and raised in Ottawa, but I went to Toronto for 27 years and stayed for a bit. I just came back here 3 years ago. And when I went to Toronto, it was even in 83, there was a celebration that we were unified and that we were together and there was a safety in numbers. And then afterwards, we went behind the 519 and we had a big picnic because we were celebrating the fact that we could. And the history before that, I only know from textbook because I was 19 years old. And you know, sometimes in my youth, and I'm not going to say youth in general, but my youth, I wasn't as aware and sensitive and educated as I should have been about the history of. But I did quickly get an education. And Matt, good for you for doing a documentary, because we don't have, in my mind, still enough education on our history.
Right.
And there's a sad loss of that. And the education component, I completely agree with you that we need to have more education. I would love to see more. I would love to see more education in and around things that are new in the community. For instance, on our board, we have Amanda Ryan, who's of Gender Mosaic and very much an activist and very much in the frontline movements. Incredible individual. And I said to her that my biggest challenge was, and I think it's everybody's, as new things enter into our movement, and that's a huge generalization, I'm sorry, into the movement, the human rights movement, we need education along the way. When I was coming out, it was pretty much a lot of gay guys, and women were somewhere back there. And then it became more equal. And then, of course, within the women's movement, there was the feminist versus the non-feminist. There's always been. But education goes so far. And I think what is happening is that people are not feeling heard. I'm not going to say it hasn't happened, but we're not close to that. But we also have to look at the bigger picture and what's going on and what we're trying to achieve in a very short amount of time. It's not that we're reluctant to, but we do have to focus in a very short amount of time to make certain things happen. But education, would love to see more of it, would welcome people to take it on. I'm not the educator. I'm not the person with the understanding of what's needed. I simply made an organization who is creating a festival. And the festival has a lot of components. So the festival, for me, yes, I will agree. There's a celebration component, but there's also a protest component and an education component. And we are trying to do a very large protest moment, which is a moment of silence this year in the parade, which is a really hard thing to achieve. But it is something that we are strategizing on right now.
I will say one thing, if I can, really quickly. The way I do understand, it actually is hard to approach Pride. In my experience, approaching Pride Toronto was very hard. Although we handed a documentary off to them late, literally 2 days before the weekend began, but even 2 weeks after, I found out that our co-chair didn't watch it. And I learned that a lot of people from Pride didn't watch it. And to me, I was like a little shocked because it was for Pride, you know? And I do have to admit it is hard to approach Pride, but I think that people just need to really do it, you know, get the attention that they deserve and do it in a way that comes from passion and truth.
So we're about a few minutes out now, about 3-4 minutes left of the show. Do either you, Vince or Adrian, have any closing remarks on today's discussion?
I'd like to take a bit of like inspiration from some of the things that happened in Pride St. Louis, actually, where there was a protest against the Pride Parade with a group that was I think it was specifically about Black Trans Lives Matter, but I'm not really sure. But some of the demands that they have were very interesting, and I think that can be replicated in prides across the country, where they had demands, for example, that I'm reading this from their manifesto, but one of their things was to end the participation of the St. Louis Metropolitan Police Department in the Pride Parade until they stopped murdering Black and brown people. Another one of the things was ending sponsorship of Pride St. Louis by corporations that participate in the gentrification and predatory lending that displace and disenfranchise communities of color. Things like this, and like actually taking concrete progressive actions and remembering at the same time Pride's roots and its intrinsically political atmosphere and the statement that it makes is extraordinarily important. And I'm looking forward to having conversations with a lot of the community members that I've been currently talking with, and yeah, so I'm extremely looking forward to, yeah.
Awesome, yeah. So not our STL Pride was the hashtag for STL's protest at the Pride Parade. It is really important, to realize that people of color are definitely, they need to be at the front of this. Like, they are being targeted most, and sorry. This was started with people of color, like Stonewall Riots, Marsha P. Johnson, like people of color created this. And
Compton's cafeteria as
well. Exactly. So many people have, so many people of color. And it's ridiculous that, we aren't at the front of this, trans Black women aren't at the front of this. It's really upsetting. And I really appreciate, Matt, you for making this documentary. Media activism is like really, really important to me. As a photographer, I put, people at the forefront, females at the forefront, people of color at the forefront of protests. And I really do appreciate that. And putting that documentary out there and giving it, to Toronto Pride was a really big thing, and I really do. Media activism has to blow up more. So I really do appreciate that.
Yes, thank you. You just gave me goosebumps.
Just to close out, do you have any comments, Tommy? And then we'll have to wrap
No,
it up.
I think this has been a great discussion. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I came here. Thank you all.
Thank you all.
For having a conversation. I think it's been a well-rounded one.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, if you are in the Ottawa area, there is a small town Ontario band performing in Irene's. This is called Long Range Hustle, very LGBT friendly. And this is a nice, cheerful song called Paddle Away to play out with. Be sure, our website is down at the moment, www.velvetstudio.ca. We were attacked by a phishing network, so we are fixing it. but you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter, and we'll be linking the episode soon if you want to listen back and get in touch with us. Thank you so much to all of my guests.
Thanks, Luke.
You were incredible.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
All right.
The needle that points to the north. If there's a lesson learned, whatever was it for, pushing off of that shore, pushing off of that shore to paddle away. Pushing off of that shore, pushing off.